Welcome back to Missing. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic today, Tim. Very excited to bring this interview to the listeners because it was one of the first ones that we've done in person in a long, long time in Wormtown. But before we get to that, how are you?
I'm doing great, Lance. Thanks a lot for asking. And when we recorded this episode, I was so excited to be in person, Lance. We were in Wormtown at the Blue Table, the Crawl Space Studios, and we had guests. Private investigators Vanessa and Andrew Weiland joined us.
It was amazing. Just a completely different dynamic when you're not behind the Zoom screen and you're speaking with someone in person and you can play off of their nuances and you can tell when they're wrapping up their thought and you can start making your notes. Like, you're not stuttering. There's no connection issues. And you can just have this energy that exists in the same room with these people. We haven't done that in a long time. And I think coming out of the gate with this conversation, I know I was like, my heart was racing. Like, I was shaking by the end of it. And there was that. And there was also the fact that we were battling through some construction upstairs, which is not common for our location there, but they were doing some work on the room above us. There's also some sirens. We'll do the best we can to cut that stuff out. But we battled through and had a wonderful conversation. And it's all part of the charm of recording in Wormtown.
You can say that again, Lance. So the Weilands have been working with Private Investigations for the Missing, which is the nonprofit that we are on the board of course, Lance. And it was founded by Bruce Maitland, father of Brianna Maitland, who went missing from Montgomery, Vermont on March 19th, 2004. And they have been working the case of Phoenix Colden.
That's correct. Phoenix Colden disappeared on December 18th of 2011 from a town called Spanish Lake, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis, Missouri. And we had spoken with Andy and Vanessa and Phoenix's mom, Goldia. That was one of the more intense conversations I think we've ever had on this show. Very productive, though, as was this conversation with Andy and Vanessa that you're about to hear.
Okay, so check out Private Investigations for the Missing and all they're doing over there at investigationsforthemissing.org, and definitely follow their social pages as well. And if you've got any information in the disappearance of Phoenix Colden, you can submit a tip right to Private Investigations for the Missing through their tip line. The number is 1-866-331-6660, or you can also email PIFTM tips@gmail.com, and anything submitted there will be passed on to the appropriate place.
And Tim, the date for Crime Con is rapidly approaching, and we will be there. Las Vegas, April 29th, 30th, and May 1st. And if you're on the fence about whether or not you plan on going, maybe this will put you over the edge. 10% off your standard badge by using code crawlspace at crimecon.com, and feel free to swing by our table there on Podcast Row, and you can ask us about Phoenix's case. You can ask us about PIs for the Missing. You can ask us about anything you want. Maybe we'll answer, but hey, you're not going to know until you ask.
That's right, Lance, and that's going to be a blast. I cannot wait. And another thing I've been having a lot of fun with is our new subscription service for Missing, and you can check it out at missing.supportingcast.fm. We haven't ever launched a Patreon for this show, but we are launching a subscription service for this show. We're going to bring you ad-free episodes, sometimes early releases. We'll give in-show subscriber shout-outs and a whole new show sharing our theories and thoughts on select disappearances.
That's one of the elements that I'm pretty excited about. The fact that when we do these episodes for the public, we have to be a bit restrained when we're speaking about our personal theories involving the missing person. And this gives us more freedom to explore theories and do sort of mental workshops with each other on the likelihood of what scenario might have happened to this particular individual.
Absolutely. So you can check that out at missing.supportingcast.fm. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. Please follow us on social media at missingcsm. And you can check out the Weilands website at lakefrontinvestigative.com.
Ah. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into The Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in The Daily Book Club.
Welcome to the Crawl Space Studios. We are here with Andy and Vanessa Weiland. How are you today?
Wonderful. Happy to be here. Yeah, thanks, Tim. In Massachusetts, actually. This is great.
Welcome. Yeah. Welcome to Wormtown. I don't want it to be lost in the intro there. We are here in person in Wormtown at the studio. It's like 80 degrees outside. It's probably the best weather we've had. We're going to do this interview. We're going to grab some lunch. There might be a little noise from above because they're doing some construction, but F it. We're here. It feels good to see you guys in person.
And yes, to meet you.
Yeah. To meet you in person.
Yeah, this is great.
Too long.
This is great.
It has been. Yes. Yeah, so we first met both of you through Private Investigations for the Missing, the nonprofit that was started by Bruce Maitland, and you can check them out at investigationsforthemissing.org. And you are private investigators who volunteered your time to join Private Investigations for the Missing and take on a case. So what case have you taken on?
So right now we're working on the Phoenix Colden case. She's a missing young lady from St. Louis, Missouri. She went missing in East St. Louis, of course. And so we've been working on that now for two years. 2 years. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And we had you on the show previously. We spoke, I think there's 4 episodes out there that you could scroll back and find on the disappearance of Phoenix Colden, where you both are in those episodes, and as well as Goldia, Phoenix's mother. And so you're still working on the case?
Yes, we sure are.
For sure.
How's it going?
I will say for us, it's not, I don't like to say it's slow going. We're just very methodical, very detail oriented. So no stone goes unturned. And, you know, we're just making headway as we can. We're at the point now, I think before we were looking at some of the known facts of the case, the things that had already been uncovered, and now we're kind of looking more at the what's going on in East St. Louis, or what was going on at the time in East St. Louis, exploring some of the less savory parts of the internet and things in that particular area where she disappeared, events that were occurring. And now we're at the point where we have a network, and I guess I should let you talk about that, the people that you want to talk
real to. Real quick, before, sure. I definitely want to hear about that, but you said something at the top of your answer that you're very methodical and detail-oriented, and after speaking with Goldia and knowing her experience, the past experience she's had with investigators and people who have said that they're going to help, how do you communicate that to someone like Goldia and tell her it might not seem like things are going on, but we are trying to be as detail-oriented and methodical as possible and still maintain her her trust in her trust in you guys? How do you communicate that to her?
Well, I think I do the bulk of the communicating with the Coldens, both telephonic and text and email and stuff. And we're keeping in touch about every week, every other week. Sometimes things come up. Sometimes they've called on us to help them on some things not necessarily directly related to the case. In some instances, where they just need someone to help them understand a something that had come up that they were just struggling with, that they didn't understand how to look at it. And we've helped them through a couple of the things, put them in touch with some law enforcement folks as well for some things that have come up. And I stay in touch with the lead detective on the case. That's Detective Tom Taylor out of the St. Louis County Police Department. We've spoken on the phone. We've exchanged some emails. But I will say, too, he has not said that the case is cold. He also has not said that he's made any progress. So that's not an attack on him or anything or a negative against him. It's just a policeman is only going to share as much as they can share with a private investigator who they also don't even know. So I a lot of gratitude for Tom just taking the time to even, entertain some of my contacts with him. I also have been speaking with some family members of the Coldens, and we are looking at trying to meet up again. We have not yet met up with them in person. I think the last time we spoke, we were talking about meeting up, COVID being what COVID was and scheduling being what scheduling was. I think we're getting closer. And so I think in the next couple months, I'll be taking a trip, at least, if not both of us, to St. Louis and getting some feet on the ground kind of stuff going on. But that is what helps us get back to Goldia and Lawrence and that constant engagement with them. I don't know, honestly, Vanessa, I don't know how confident Goldia is that we're going to be able to help them in this case. However, I think they value the help that we are trying to give them. And I'm still looking to move forward with them on those things, on very specific things that are pertinent to the case itself. Vanessa.
Yeah, they knew from the very beginning that my participation was definitely going to be in the background, and sometimes I'm going to find things that are not pleasant, and maybe just not that it doesn't need to be shared, but it could do nothing but cause heartache and things that may not even be true. So I don't do any of the communication. They just have the trust that, I'm somewhere in the background and Andy's going to communicate what he can and what he will. I will say, though, that, he's always been kind of the person, the persona person in out of the two of us. And, Christmas cards and birthdays and anniversaries, things like that, aren't forgotten by him. And so, I just can't do, I'm not very good at that kind of stuff.
This is how the dynamic works, where you're the front-facing representative of the investigative team. And
you do the interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you do like the background stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting because I don't think a lot of people appreciate that part of it.
So my background has been doing military intelligence. And so I think when we talked before, that kind of the things that I was able to do and able to learn, I'm trying to bring that, forward by looking for missing people, specifically with open source intelligence. And so that, a lot of times OSINT is for things like everybody knows Bellingcat and, they saw the downed airplane and things like that. It's
for those people out there that don't know, I'm not saying
everybody does.
Yeah. Your face.
what? Fill in the listeners. The handful that don't know.
Sure. So Bellingcat is an organization. They basically do publicly. They take publicly available information. They crowdsource it to answer questions that we would normally think of as intelligence questions. So if there is a, for instance, the MH17, the plane crashed, right? So they were the ones that did all of the geos, the background information to kind of point to who they believed and who they proved eventually was responsible for the crash, right? So other things that they might do is for a child pornography ring or something along those lines. They would take information that people just Joe Schmo out there, you know, they would grab all kinds of information, put it together in a package, and then expose or you know, communicate with other intelligence agencies. What? Well, actually, they don't do that, but they would just communicate with law enforcement or something, people who are responsible for doing bad things out there. And the big thing that they do is the crowdsourcing portion of it, you know, taking people all working on a big problem and putting that together to solve the problem.
Are those civilians or are those?
All civilians. Those are civilians. In fact, they tend not to work with government agencies.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty cool. You can go to bellingcat.com, BELLINGCAT.com, and see what they're up to. It's pretty cool. You can donate and see the causes that they're working with and for. And it's funny, I Googled Bell and Cat because I thought that's what you said.
Yeah, sorry.
but it came up. It came up.
I mean, everybody knows who Bell and Cat is.
People were like, yeah, people who don't enunciate well, this is what they usually search. So not saying that I'm anywhere near those guys. I don't have their pedigree or some of their skills probably, but what I do have, I'm trying to use to find people that are
missing.
I
think that goes back to, Lance, your question, the background part of what she does, right? So we can get into the OSINT. We can talk about that. That is the kind of stuff that I rely on Vanessa to. You mentioned earlier, Vanessa, there are some unsavory parts of the web that we have to go to sometimes. I've gone to some of those in this investigation. There are things that you can't unsee. And when you start talking about, you start seeing it differently than when you're looking at it at the level that Vanessa's been looking at some of these things. You start seeing, forgive me, Vanessa, not to put words in your mouth, but you start, when you do this as part of an investigation, it's not just pornographic content necessarily, or it's not just crude message boards. You have a sense that they're talking, you're looking for something relevant to your case, and that's when it becomes really vile. And those are the things that happen behind the scenes that we don't always talk about with the Coldens, because it is pulling a thread, right, Ness?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this, the comments that sometimes you get on your videos or things like that. Like, sometimes there's some gold, there are nuggets of gold in those comments, or, you know, maybe that person just wants to be part of something, and so they may make a comment, and then we chase that down, or we're looking to see who's behind some of the stuff that's said. A lot of times, and I think this is where I got off track, a lot of times with OSINT, it's really about companies or nation states or something like that. So you have like IP addresses, and you know, it's kind of what people think of, oh, this is what hackers do to gather information. But in our case, it's really about figuring out who these people are that are making comments or suggestions, or say they know something about the case. So we try to track those people down and eliminate them or whatever the case may be. And so just like this, and I'm sure you guys saw with Maura Murray, there were people that were saying things that really didn't have any idea. They were just trying to get involved as best they can.
And I want to go back. You just said we track them down and eliminate them.
Did I say?
You did.
I
am not in the business of eliminating people.
No, not
anymore.
I've always been nervous about you.
Yeah, yeah, he has since the beginning. I remember. Yeah. No, we go out and eliminate those red herring stories. Yeah. Yeah, like, hey, that's just a red herring. We eliminate.
I am not in the business of eliminating people from this world. No, absolutely not. Not at all.
But you keep a list of
I've
possible.
Got a book right here, Ledger of Perceived Slights. So
yeah.
This is her book.
No, I'm so sorry. Yes, we know whether or not to keep investigating them, keep going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, right. Ruling out those false leads, because there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
And like you said, there are people who want to be involved. For whatever reason, they just want to feel a part of something.
Yeah.
And they'll make a comment and that comment looks interesting. It looks of value. And then you do a little bit more digging, and you realize, really, they don't know.
And you're able to identify who some of these commenters on, like, social media are?
On occasion, if you kind of, once in a while, you can follow back, you know, follow somebody through their other comments, you know, their usernames. Mm-hmm. That's how we were able to find some of the people in East St. Louis that were in certain social groups, things like that. And then you can always, if necessary, you could get more into, oh, what videos are they posting? Where else is this social media handle used? And then you can follow it through to Twitter, for instance, or an email address or something like that. Unfortunately for us as private citizens, our information gets connected very quickly and easily when we post things.
I think one of the challenges too you face as an OSINT type investigator, right, is the real popular social media places need to verify your name, your number, an email, an actual email. Facebook's that way, Twitter. So finding ways around those things is a challenge, right? You can do that by, again, pulling the thread on, like, usernames, on looking to see where other what other places that person has gone to, right? Mm-hmm. Like you were saying, and but that inability to get in deeper to some of these accounts that we would like to, when we get someone to a point, at least me, Vanessa, and this may be where you go a little bit deeper, and I don't understand how to get that deep, but for me, it stops there, and then I'm like, oh, I see a picture, I see a face, I see friends, but then it doesn't just stop, because now you see associates, you see friends, and you can kind of move on without getting necessarily too deep into their profile.
So if Vanessa is able to sort of identify one of the commenters, and they are somebody that could be connected or maybe formerly knew Phoenix or something like that, is that when you would take that information and then try to interview them?
Potentially.
Yeah. Has that happened in this case?
I know of one person, I think, that we've seen a comment from that I am interested in speaking with.
Two now.
Yeah, yep. Okay, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so they are on the post-COVID, we can move around. Yep. List, yeah. Which I guess is right now, actually.
Yeah, and that's the that actually is good, because some of the folks, we want to talk to some of the folks that she went to school with, that Phoenix went to school with.
Great.
She went to two different universities, right? And have an opportunity to talk with them in town, those folks that are still there. Now, we only hope that they're willing to speak with me. Mm-hmm. When I get to town.
When you see these comments, what is it about the comments that stands out to you, without getting into specifics, but how do you, because you said that you have one and then you said no two, so it made me think, is there something that stands out in these comments that you're like, that's different?
There are the obvious ones that we can catch very quickly, where people are like, oh, I knew her when, things like that. Then there are people who think they're being slick, and maybe they say something like, oh, there's more to this story. She wasn't as nice, you know, those kinds of things where we were like, okay, well, what do you know? And, you know, it's maybe some lady in Kansas who really, you know, loves true crime and she knows nothing. Or it turns out it's somebody who's connected to other people that are part of the case, you know. So we look for those kinds of things. What else do
YouTube.
I look for? Well, yes, of course.
If you want to get into
any
platforms.
Of those.
Yeah.
Comments that are very antagonistic towards the parents, or that have levied, accusations against the parents that maybe we would want to look into. That usually goes at the top of the list, because they're very rarely true, but somebody's got a bone to pick. And I want to know why they have a bone to pick.
And the Coltons have kind of been through the ringer in this case as far as comments like that go, and as far as being approached by folks who are not trying to help their case.
Yeah, they have. They've been on both sides of that. Some of the PIs that were out for themselves, maybe, right, as we've heard from them. And then also there is a real threat to, I'll call it a threat, but it's a real threat to families of missing persons when they put their stuff out.
Their personal
looking,
information.
Their personal information. Yeah. Their personal information, their real contact information, you know, seeking to broaden their help base. And then you've got, non-state actors who, you know, maybe, you know, illegal, like criminal organizations who might use that information to try to gain money from the families, from the, you know, to victimize them, to solicit money, coming up to them and saying, you know, calling them and saying things such as, your daughter has been in a car accident and is here with us right now. I'm a police officer. And then, you know, there's, it's a tragic thing that these families go through, but there are tools available to them to help them, to include the FBI's cyber crimes reporting website. And forgive me, I don't know the link to that website right there off the bat. But, you know, I've had to do one of those for this case already.
Yeah, that's a common scam, mm-hmm. Whether or not people are missing or just, you know, like... I'm sure you guys have heard the thing where somebody calls grandma, you know, it's an older lady, and they're like, oh, your grandson was in a car accident. We have him here. Your contact information was in his glove box. You know, we have this bill, this hospital bill to pay, or just whatever the case may be. Those kinds of things happen. And then when you put on top, like people are putting the Colden's name out, you know, Phoenix's name is out there. They have their contact information. I think it's an attractive target for certain people that you know, try to get over. So
has that actually happened to the Colden's?
Yes.
Where people, so that wasn't just like a hypothetical.
No.
Like people have called them and said that Phoenix was with them and had been in an accident. Yeah, that's incredible.
We've helped them through that. Mm-hmm. A couple times. And so in the process...
And they've had that happen before us
yes,
as well.
They
had. That was a well-publicized one, that scam.
But significantly, what I observed is that the fact that they have had this happen to them before didn't change the impact that it had on them. When they called me asking for help, is this real? Is this something that we should be, you know, how do we report this? Do we call the FBI? Do we do this? And so... That's kind of one of the things that we do to help them out to navigate that, and don't bother them filling out reports. Give me the information. We'll fill out the report for you, and we'll get it submitted to the police and the FBI.
That's great.
Yeah, we've been hearing this this sort of story more frequently in the past year or so, and sort of just trying to dig into that a little bit and I guess expose as much of that as we possibly can because it's something we find obviously pretty egregious.
And it's not all scams, Tim. It's also just people being crude and like unnecessarily so. Why? Well, is it ever necessary to be crude? But why? What do they have to gain? And are they a child doing this thing that they think is funny? Or are they, you know, is it a prank? Or is it part of a longer game, you know, a longer scam, if you will? And that's what you have to watch for is, you know, do they contact again? Do they try to make contact, you know, a day or two after? And so far that... Yeah, that hasn't panned out.
Yeah, it's really gross. We've been, like Tim said, we've been looking into these sort of charlatans that have come along, and it is kind of they are trying to play a long game. They really are trying to play a very long game,
a long con, even
to the point where it's like, if I was conning you for so long, I mean, come on, I am legit. Like, no one would do it this long. Like, that's what you start to question. And then they troll, like, the GoFundMes. A lot of these families have GoFundMes that have raised thousands of dollars, and you just have to go on GoFundMe and type in missing. You know, type in the word missing and hit search, and then it's, you're telling
everybody how much you got, how much you've earned.
How much you've raised. Yeah.
Raised.
And I think
money is raised from the community.
Right.
Because the people want to see movement in the case.
Right.
You know, that's the part that... Well, one of the parts that get me really furious talking about this subject.
Yeah.
Is there anything else on this topic that we can speak about on the air that could help families?
Yeah, I think so. At least for the attempted scams that go out, right? There are things that people can do. They can pay attention to the inflection of the voice of the person calling. Sometimes it sounds very realistic, very realistic. We do know that this scam often originates in Central and South America, that you'll hear a Hispanic accent over time. They might put a person on the phone who says they claims to be the family member, and they may sound very convincing. But that's because they've done their research and they've scrubbed the internet And that's a low-hanging fruit for an organization like that. So things that they want to look for, they want to, first of all, let's do this in steps. Stay calm. Stay calm. And immediately ask to speak with the loved one, the missing loved one. Immediately ask to speak with them. Ask how they're doing. And then ask for a location, where they are. Start getting as many specifics as you can. And as long as they keep talking and staying on the phone, just keep them on there, but stay calm. Don't panic. Don't start yelling at them and engage at them or try to threaten them if they change their story. If it changes and it becomes quickly noticeable that this is a scam, if you know it's a scam, if you know you're being scammed and they ask you for money, remember, the police will never ask you for money to get your loved one out of trouble. The FBI will never ask you for money to get your loved one out of trouble. Don't fall victim to that. And if they are a organization that you think might have access to your loved one, and you feel that the threat and the demands for, let's say, money are that important or that realistic, you need to be prepared to take it to the FBI. Now, the interesting thing we found is the phone calls that are common, they'll drop off after maybe the first 30 to 40 seconds. They'll just drop. Then they'll call back about a minute or two later. And they'll demand to, you know, hey, you need to help fix this situation. And they may call back a third time, changing their story altogether, saying, we are a serious crime organization, right? A legitimate crime organization, if it's such a thing. We are a real crime organization. We have the ability to hurt your daughter if you don't give us money, to hurt your loved one if you don't give us money now.
And if you're a parent who's grieving or worried, it's going to be, nobody would just say, okay, well, you know, obviously this is a scam, right? Your tensions are high, your emotions are high. And that means that your memory is diminished or degraded. So make sure once you hang up, you take notes of your impressions, your thoughts, your ideas, anything that can that has come up during the call. The littlest thing could really mean that we would be able to eliminate or really chase down these things. I'd also say, I guess, with that, also reiterate, you know, the stay calm part, but even if they don't ask for money, they're asking for your time. They're asking for your energy. And so just remember that you're spending something. You're expending something on each one of those. So we tend to ask families to have a separate line, maybe not necessarily a personal line, something that they give to their PIs or that they give to a friend or somebody that's close to the family that may be able to sort of be a little bit of a filter buffer. So then if they do have your personal phone, that would be questionable too, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah, and then on top of that too, they can flip their story, right? And so that's it makes you can't you want to trust a cop instinctively. So a cop is calling you saying, you know, we're here to take care of, make sure that you get your loved one back. And then that cop flips it on you and turns into a monster on the phone, demanding money or death as a consequence. And that's very hard. So, yeah, tools are out there. These things fall even when they go over the even via phone calls. Right. It still falls under the cyber crimes. Mm-hmm. Cyber crimes division.
Yep.
And so they don't necessarily track all of, the FBI doesn't have the time or bandwidth to track all of these things down. But because of the types of reporting that we've been able to do for the Coldens, I've been able to go back through and see other reports, and they're so close. The MO, the method of approach, the TTPs that they are, the tactics and techniques that they use to try to hook the family on the phone, the short duration, the multiple short duration phone calls, they all match up. And then even the ties back to Hispanic sounding accents, right? Meaning that they potentially, the FBI knows a lot of these are originating in Mexico. Specifically in Mexico. So, yeah, it's a tough spot to be in, but there are tools for them. And if they have an investigator that they're working with, Yeah, that investigator should really be helping them with those. In my opinion, they should really be helping them with those types of reporting.
One of the things, I guess, that's good about us, even though we're a little bit slower because we're doing this on a part-time basis, on a volunteer basis, is that we're not expecting anything from the family. So everything that we're doing is just sort of like we have the bandwidth, I guess, or we are more willing to be methodical about what we're doing. We're more willing to take those calls because it's not, we don't have to bill it, you know. So I feel like if you, places like Private Investigations for the Missing and groups like this, it really helps for especially families that are already, they don't have maybe the money to invest in a private investigator.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear the behind the curtain type work that goes into this, because when you identify yourself as an investigator, you think primarily you're out to catch the person, you're out to get the person, you're out to solve the case, but there's so much more to it. You're managing the relationship with the family, you're helping out in these scams. Investigating is like, it goes beyond the actual investigation, which is impressive to me that you guys dig that deep and you continue to communicate with the family.
It's a relationship.
And it's a whole relationship, and the word investigator doesn't seem to properly cover that, you know, yeah. Everything.
I feel
do.
More like an extension. Honestly, yeah. I feel like more like an extension to Goldia.
A family member, yeah.
Because
yeah.
She's mm-hmm. done this investigating for years. She's done this investigating for so many years. So things that I'm thinking about now, she may have thought about 5 years ago and already forgotten that she had thought about it.
Yeah.
And that happens often a lot.
Yeah. Is it a little bit of a red flag if someone goes directly to the family instead of going to, say, the St. Louis police or
yes.
the Missouri police or even PIs for the missing? We have a tip line. You can submit a tip in Phoenix Colden's case, you can submit a tip in any case, and that will be forwarded. That phone number is 1-866-331-6660.
And I'd also point your listeners to, again, to the St. Louis County Police Department, since they do have official charge of the case.
Right, and that's Missouri?
Missouri, okay. Yeah.
And I guess I hesitate to bring this up because of Missouri's, or actually that entire area's history with the police. But again, in Detective Taylor's case, we can sit here and question all of the decisions that were made starting in 2011 up till now. I know that some parents and families feel so uncomfortable going to the police and feel so uncomfortable going to the FBI even. Maybe you're worried that your missing loved one was actually involved in things that could jam them up, you know, or the family has some history or whatever the case may be. So we find it very important to keep putting out Private Investigations for the Missing, like keep putting out names like that, keep putting, you know, people like you guys out, because like it or not, there sometimes is that barrier between the police. And so we tend to say, you know, go to the police, call the police. But for people who don't, maybe they feel like they don't have that as an option, there are other organizations that are willing to help. And I think that I would really like to point that out, because sometimes we have the problems where we say these people are missing or underrepresented or things like that. And that could be one of the very reasons, is just because the family in that community
doesn't
feel comfortable
connected.
with law enforcement or with mm-hmm. government.
Yeah,
which
well
is,
said.
Is,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Value in putting out Private Investigations for the Missing, Tim, as you did, that number for those types of people, particularly who just want to talk to someone who's not necessarily an officer of the law.
And they, you know, on some level, they're probably appreciative of the fact that you can call a number like for Private Investigations for the Missing, knowing that you're not speaking directly to law enforcement, but knowing, OK, this will get to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So you are still communicating by way of another organization to law enforcement, but it's a more comfortable situation for you.
Yeah, one of the scams situations that we spoke of earlier resulted in an extended conversation with a detective. You know, and that was a conversation that, like you said, the family member didn't have to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had all the information, and if the officer needed more information, that officer knows they can go right to the family at that point, you know.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. And now, specifically about Phoenix Colden's case, is there anything you'd like to speak about here? I know you've been working on it for a while, and there's twists and turns, and I'm sure there's some names and details you can't mention, but is there anything that you can mention here that could potentially help you on your mission?
I think one of the things that it still bothers me, and I don't want to imply that Phoenix was involved in anything nefarious, but the area, again, that her car was left in at that time, being able to look at archives for forums mm-hmm. and things like that.
That was St. Clair Avenue, East St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was a high crime, but a very high area, I guess, known for prostitution. And again, this is one of those things where I don't want to talk bad about police, but at that time, the people who would seek out prostitutes, often they would do their business and the police would confront them and say, on about your way, and they would arrest, in my opinion, who is really the victim in this case, right? The prostitute, often underage minors, things like that. So I think that we have kind of this weird, this weird confluence of events at that particular time in that particular area, that she may have been caught up in something, not just she happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time with some people that were very, very bad. And so I would like to kind of, we're exploring that a little bit more, exploring some of the people that tend to post on the forums about mm-hmm. things that they like to do, like to do to women specifically.
These are forums that are not your, these are not your average forum. You got to dig for these forums.
Yeah, you got to dig through. Yep. You got to dig through for these people. You have to kind of prove yourself, and which is not something I'm necessarily willing to do in this case.
What do you mean? Prove yourself? Like you infiltrate the group and...
I would not, but what my purpose at this point is to collect as much evidence as I can without becoming a member of any of
right.
this, and present that as a, these are the circumstances, these are the people that were in this area, around this area, that maybe could be looked at. And then people who are much more savvy than me at this kind of stuff, they would look at it instead.
Is this dark web research that you get
yes,
into?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And actually the location where Phoenix's car was towed from, mm-hmm. ultimately, right? That location, it now the buildings, there were two buildings there. Those are now gone. They were raised probably 3 years ago, 2018, right after Oxygen Network did their special on Phoenix. About 2-3 months after that, the because you saw now Chief of Police, Chief Perry, who was the investigating officer, the responding officer that night, December 18, 2011, that evening, who we've talked about. But he was out there in that video, the Oxygen Network special, and you could see the buildings in the background. And then we went back on Google Earth. Went back in time, and those were gone in 2018, right? About 2 months after, they were just totally gone. They dug up the backyard of it, piled everything up in the back. Do you feel comfortable talking about what you learned about the location on St. Clair?
Sure. That it was a gentleman's club. People referred to it more so as a hotel. So that was definitely one of the things that we were looking at. I'm not a geospatial expert by any means, but there did seem to be disturbances in the backyard that we saw from, you know, looking from a couple of days to another, looking from years to another. We have some gaps in our mapping software, I guess we have some gaps that on certain dates, so we can't necessarily say for sure what we think is going on, but there definitely was, I mean, that was a hot spot of activity, and now that the buildings are gone.
You said earlier that we know she went missing in East St. Louis, and we think she went missing in East St. Louis, right?
Oh,
because
mm-hmm.
she left from the home in St. Louis, Missouri, mm-hmm. and an hour later, her vehicle, or an hour or so later, her vehicle was there in East St. Louis at that location.
With the door ajar?
Unknown.
Oh, unknown? Oh, okay.
In fact, Chief Perry has said, come back and said, no, the doors were all closed. The engine was off. It didn't seem like there was anything going on. He looked inside the vehicle, said there was no sign of a struggle. There didn't seem to be anything out of place. There was no blood on the scene. There was no sign of violence. And so he just summarily had it towed within 30 minutes.
So the car was essentially parked near that stop sign, or it was stopped at the stop sign?
Well, there was no stop sign.
Parks. Oh, there wasn't?
No.
It was like it was a roundabout at the time, and it was pulled off into some,
The roundabout, I'm sorry, Ness, the roundabout is new. That was a straight through on St. Clair, and then it veered off to the right, to the north. But the question at the time was, and this comes back to, they mentioned it in the Oxygen Network as well, is that this might have been somebody mentioning to the Coldens that the doors were open and the car was running. Somehow that story got in there, but I'm not even saying it was a story. The Coldens just say, I don't know where it came from, but that's what was reported. But then Chief Perry has since said, no, the car confirmed that the car was on the side of the road. The car was on the side of the road. The doors were closed. It was not running, and there didn't seem to be any sign of disturbance around the car, so he just had it towed.
And I'm sorry, I should have said, when I'm saying no, it wasn't parked, more so like it wasn't a parking spot. It wasn't, it really shouldn't have been.
It was on the shoulder.
It was on the shoulder. Yeah.
Not in the middle of the road, which to me, again, and I think we talked about, I don't want to go back to something we've already discussed with y'all, but to me, if it was in the middle of the road, get it towed. If it's on the side of the road, it's probably going to get towed, but it's going to get stickered first. You know, it's going to get stickered, might get a boot on it, or someone might steal it.
So why was it towed then?
We don't know why it was towed.
Because it was towed that night?
It was towed within 30 minutes of him arriving, or 57
very
minutes.
Quickly.
Yeah,
because Phoenix could have gone back to the vehicle, right?
You would think.
It must have been somehow in the way. It must have been somehow.
But he had said in the Oxygen Network special, it was on the side of the road. That was the thing. It was on the side of the road, and that somebody called 911. And we do have a copy of the police report that then Officer Perry filed. I have both his handwritten notes and the system generated notes that I got from a Freedom of Information request to the police department there. They match up. And the one thing that stands out on both of them is it says victim, female.
A 911 call. So somebody was it like a neighbor or was somebody driving by and they
unknown.
Called?
We don't know who called in.
911. Why would you ever call 911 for a car?
So there was a victim identified as a female. And then since then, the police department was absorbed by the St. Louis County Police Department. The East St. Louis Police Department was at this point or at this area. No, it wasn't absorbed. Forgive me. It wasn't absorbed. Their all 911 dispatch was centralized at St. Louis County Police Department. So they no longer, East St. Louis Police Department no longer has their own 911 dispatch, but at the time they did. And I FOIA'd those records as well. They were destroyed when they found out that they were being transferred, that requirement is being transferred to the St. Louis County Police Department. All the 911 records were destroyed from East St. Louis. They're just gone.
So you don't know what the call was about?
No, they don't have them.
What? So then this question would be pointless. What was the female a victim of?
Right. Yes.
Well, I mean, I don't understand how that call, and there's a female victim, and the car's only been parked there.
57 minutes later, it's towed. He shows up, 57 minutes later, it's towed. Now, I've been harsh on Chief Perry. Maybe unnecessarily so, because I don't know the man. And he might be the sharpest dude. He might feel a certain way about this case that still bothers him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I guess if you asked earlier, is there one thing we could say? It's like, Chief, talk to us. Talk to us, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've tried calling him, Lou Berry has tried calling him Chief to Chief. You know, retired chief to chief.
Still doesn't.
No answer. But,
unbelievable. That's
but
crazy.
He's a busy chief, too. He's got a very busy city.
Well, this is one of his cases. Yeah. Like, it's part of his job.
Yeah, he did the oxygen special. That was more than a phone call with you.
I want to get back to that 911 records topic that you mentioned. Like, aren't those, like, digitized?
Yeah, you would think.
Like, why would you ever destroy 911 records? I
well,
mean, if
you
they
would
can
think
exist
that
on a hard drive.
East St. Louis and St. Louis would have some sort of communication system where they would say, hey, we just picked up an abandoned car.
Yeah.
And so does this, were there any cars reported stolen or anything? There are several things that we could say you would think.
Yeah.
And we could either look at this as some vast conspiracy or it's just a comedy of errors that has, I guess I could just say it, that has been exhibited by police departments across the United States.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Not to pick on anyone.
Not to pick on anyone, right. But I mean,
it's pretty
there have been
familiar story.
And these are people, they're people too. Police are people too. Yeah. Sometimes they're just in it for a paycheck. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some better than others.
At what point do you make the decision? Who's making the decision when you're merging, like when you're centralizing the 911 calls?
Yeah.
Who's the person who decision, says, "Oh, delete those"?
The decision to delete the records was a very deliberate decision.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
what is
that's
wrong
not
with
an
people?
Accident. That can't be. Oh, we accidentally lost them when we did the transition over there. I'm having a hard time with that.
Yeah. Like
now,
we're trying to save room.
We could say because we've both worked for large bureaucracies.
Yes.
And we could say that when a reorg happens, there are people who lose their jobs or who lose their positions, their clout in an organization, and they're just mad and they lash out and then they do something like that.
I
so
can't
it
believe
could
that
be,
being a disgruntled, but you're right.
Could be a reason.
You're right.
Yeah. So
we could speculate all day long, guys.
Yeah, that's
exactly
right.
We just don't
want
to have them. We don't know. Yeah, they still have the cell phones, I believe, and perhaps her laptop. I've asked for access to that as well through a FOIA, through information that they may have gathered. You know, the whatever they might have gained, whatever they may have gained from doing that, and that didn't come back in the Freedom of Information Act request. And what's interesting though is in the phone calls that I followed up with the two police departments, everybody wanted to help. I get a sense from everyone I've spoken with. They are interested in this case, and they all know the case when I call.
Yeah.
And now it's to the point where I've heard them say, "Oh, you're the PI.
Good.
That's been calling about this." And so maybe that's another reason. Maybe I need to follow up with another FOIA request, you know, do a little bit more. But all that came from the FOIA request, two FOIA requests, was the report that we already had a copy of. Just it was digitized report of the police report from that night.
Yeah.
And it also said female victim.
I mean, I would love to know why that says female victim.
Yeah, and if Chief Perry could come out and just explain a couple of those things, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
But hey, is he responsible for answering those questions? I would say yes.
Yeah.
Since he was the responding officer. Is his memory bad? And I mentioned this in the last time we spoke, you know, maybe it's just bad memory. But his memory's gotta be good enough if he made it to Chief. If he's the chief of the police, he's got to be pretty sharp. He's got to be pretty sharp tack.
It's so bizarre, the labeling female victim, right? So you're using that word, victim. So whoever called had to have seen something that would put it in someone's head that it was that she was a victim.
And, well, we don't even know it was Phoenix,
fair,
right?
To be fair, the form itself has victim and I think male and female. Like, so that
so
was part of the form, if I'm not mistaken.
It is a fill in the blank. It's a check the box.
Okay.
So, but again, you ask, well, who calls 911 on an abandoned vehicle?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why would there be a victim if there's just a parked vehicle or an abandoned vehicle?
And would the 911 dispatch have made such a mistake as to put in there, hey, there's a female victim. And then Chief Perry puts in his report, there was a female victim.
But there was no sign of any struggle or
sign
any
of
crime
struggle.
At the car. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Victim of what?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if you're law enforcement, if you're like Chief Perry, and you're not answering questions. I mean, somebody saw something out there in order to get that you know terminology down as victim. Somebody saw something. Like, why aren't you doing as many broadcasts about it as possible? I mean, someone saw something.
But yeah, we've got both. I mean, I'm confirming right now. I mean, I've seen them both. You know, I've got them. I've got control of both of those documents, and they do both confirm that there was they both indicate there was a female victim. Again, my question. Why does somebody call 911 on an abandoned vehicle, right? Nobody does that. And if they do, the cops aren't going to respond in less than, you know, 15 minutes or whatever it was that he responded, however fast he got out there, because they're going to say, an abandoned vehicle? Sir, ma'am, this is not the number to call. Please call the police department directly at, you know, and talk to the traffic department. You know, they'll send somebody out, you know, but if you're calling 911, there's a problem. What the hell was the problem?
You would argue an emergency too. That's
right.
Yeah.
What was the emergency? What was the problem? And what confounds me still to this day is that there was no follow through. Nobody asked, why was this done? Why was this a 911 call? Nobody asked. And he's not talking about it. He hasn't explained it. What he did in the Oxygen Network special was explain where the car wasn't.
I did feel like his Oxygen Network appearance was a bit of cleanup, a bit of CYA. And I think we've talked about that.
And that
before.
Roundabout was in the picture in 2018 when they did that.
Yeah, that's right.
That roundabout, that new roundabout was in the picture. Yeah. So again, forgive me, Chief Perry, if you do hear this. I'm not trying to be an ass. But if nobody else is doing this case right now, working for Phoenix, we are.
Right. Yeah.
Let us do some of the legwork for you, man.
A real quick story. When I lived in Boston, there was a car that was on the parked in a parking spot in the neighborhood. It was running. And I walked past it and did some errands and came back like a couple hours later, and it was still there running. So I called the police. I called the Boston police, not 911, and I said, what should I do about this to get this car? I don't know what's going on with it. It's been here for a couple of hours that I know of running. And they said, call 911.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, really? And they said, yeah, call 911. And I was like, okay. And I felt silly calling 911, but they had someone out there in 2 minutes. I called 911. I was like, I don't think this is an emergency, but there's a car here that's running, and it's just been sitting here running for a couple hours. And they would... When I was walking away, I could hear the sirens.
There was somebody coming
in. And they were
coming. Yeah. But, I mean, the vehicle was running,
right? Vehicle was running, yeah.
And here in Phoenix's case, that vehicle was not out of gas when they found it in the tow yard. It still had gas in it. So it hadn't just been running and then run out.
Yeah.
So if what Chief Perry says is accurate, that it was on the side of the road, doors closed, car not running.
So we live in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And there are cars on the side of the road all the time. Mm-hmm. And they are there for days and days. And I don't know if that's an indictment against Baltimore and D.C. Yeah. or if it's an issue. Yeah, but I mean, especially because they're not running, you know, and often, you know, people do their little flag. They put their shirts in the window or something like that. So you always know what is an out of commission vehicle. But still, it's just not something that people do. No one would think to call 911 for a shut off car and like, on the side of the road.
And like Lance, you know, in your situation with that car running. I get it, I guess. I do get it. Because, hey, what if someone's dead in the car? You know, well, weird, but what if there's a baby left in a running car?
Yes.
You know, that I can understand. But if you're walking past that car and it's just running and you are concerned then about, I would think you're more concerned then about domestic safety.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a terrorism type concern. And that's what we're all vigilant on as well. But you don't typically call, I wouldn't think someone would have a terrorism concern outside of a brothel.
Fascinating element to this. And does all of this information you've told Goldia, right?
The vast majority of it, yes. Yeah.
I don't think
with some exception.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything too specific here that we haven't, I don't think there's anything we haven't shared with her because we do, I do follow up with things, but the specifics on some. Like, yeah, the things, the red herrings, we don't need to bother her with because they go. And look, when Goldia, if she hears this and there's something that we haven't talked about with her, she's going to understand the red herring thing because she's been doing this for 10 years now.
Yeah.
You know, she has gone through dozens and dozens of rabbit holes, down dozens of rabbit holes, hundreds of them probably, more than she remembers.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's anything here that was that's so earth shattering there, you know, that we've
not for to, yeah,
not for,
no.
not for the cold.
Yeah.
Ones,
They've done their homework.
And we've talked about the house or that building on, you know, I've asked them what did you think of it? They said, well, we thought it was a place of ill repute. But Lawrence actually went to a lot of strip clubs in his own investigation, he was going in. They would drive up there. He would go in. He would talk to the owners. Do you know this girl? Have you ever seen her? So they were willing to entertain early on the possibility that she had been forced into a situation that she didn't necessarily want to be in.
For sure.
Good.
And so he went all over the place, St. Louis and East St. Louis. And so that's the level of commitment these two had early on and throughout for the last 10 years. It hasn't changed. They're just tired.
Yeah.
So now with private investigations for the missing, we have an opportunity to just kind of you know, be that shoulder under their arm, kind of help them carry this along a little bit further. You know, Goldia is going to be, she's about to turn, you know, she's mid-70s. She's about to turn 75.
She's 75?
She does not look a day.
No.
Over, no, she looks great.
Yeah, yeah, a day over. I would, yeah, she's looks great. She and Lawrence both. But I know she wants to see her daughter before too much longer. We talked about that a lot. And that's how just about every phone call that we have together, it ends with her saying, Andy, I thank you, but I just want to see my daughter again. Yeah. And she's told me straight up, I don't think you're going to be able to find her.
I mean, imagine, you know, you said that they're tired and you said that right after you're talking about how they drive up to a strip club and Lawrence would go in. Can you imagine after so many strip clubs, so many times doing that, like how tired you would be not getting an answer, having to show the picture again and going in
and
again?
They're very Christian. They're a very Christian family. So yeah. They're very religious, right? They're very, what is correct and what is not correct. Right. As you got from Goldia mm-hmm. herself, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're very principled people. So going into a place of ill repute, if you will.
Sure, yeah.
Into the devil's den.
And also,
you know,
you think
to try
of
to find their daughter.
They're seeing other people, and they know what situations those girls are in.
They
you
know
what
I
mean?
Have
and
families.
So it would just make your imagination run wild going in and seeing this every day.
Yeah. And that's something that we don't really talk about enough when we talk about private investigations for the missing, where, you know, the overall mission statement is providing investigators for families. But look at everything that's going into it. They're tired. You guys are helping them out. You guys are now the ones who are saying, all right, we'll start making these calls. We'll report back to you. We'll be literally the, you know, your shoulder for a while. You talk and like that's heartbreaking that you talk to her and she says, I thank you for what you're doing, but I don't think you're going to find her. She has somebody to say that to at least. She didn't have that before.
I can't imagine. Like, we talked about this, actually. Our daughter is about the same age as Phoenix when she disappeared. And she is a firecracker, to say the least. You know what I mean? And I'm worried about her all the time, but I know that she can handle herself in various situations. But very recently, she was driving and ran out of gas, and so she stopped at a gas station to fill up her car, and her windows are tinted so you couldn't see in, but so she had gotten out by herself and she was filling up her car, and she saw this really, really beautiful, nice, you know, Silverado or something, you know, big truck, kind of off, and a guy had walked out and he was speaking kind of broken English and, you know, was saying, hey, you know, come over here, you know, can you help me, or, you know, something along those lines. And she was like, no, I'm good, you know, and just kind of like, and then some friends got out of the car and was like, hey, we got a problem. And so then he left. But up until then,
he was right up to her door.
He was right there with her. And so, I mean, just thinking of the speed at which things can happen to somebody. And that, you know, somebody who...
This was in Baltimore.
And she looks like she could take care of herself. I'll just say it like that. You know what I mean? And so there's nobody safe. And so we think about that all the time and like what we would have to do, what we would go through if we had to look for her or for our son in these kinds of cases. And it just, it kind of propels us forward a little bit, yeah. You know, where we would maybe get tired as
well.
Oh,
for sure.
You know?
And that's not to say that this case in 2 years hasn't had its own effect on us as investigators, right?
Yeah.
And not we're not victims of this by any means, but it does have an effect on you. And it is the same with the intelligence work, you know, for military intelligence type stuff. There are things that you're privy to that are ugly.
Yeah, right. And what do? Like, you come to terms with that. You file that away in a part of your brain that you're like, yeah, I don't want to.
You just compartmentalize it.
Yeah, I'll access that when I need to.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.